on 26th October. There are a bunch of labs back there, and I want to pick them up. A couple of observations. The labs.
Yeah, I have the labs, but I don't have this little sheet.
Well, that's the answer sheet that you put. You transfer your answer from the lab activity that you put in your notebook to those particular sheets you get online.
Right.
You haven't turned any of those in yet?
No, I've been turning in the actual packets.
Yeah, but the packet, you shouldn't be writing in the packet.
Really?
Really, so I don't even see it.
Damn.
So when I go and check through the packets and I see writing all over it, I'm going to say, oh boy, somebody wasn't paying attention. So, yeah, those are the answer sheets. That's how you get a grade. So right now you've got all nothings.
I have those packets. Do I know I'm allowed to put them on the answer sheet?
Well, where are the packets?
In my truck.
Yeah, so you haven't handed anything in?
Well, like, I've handed a couple of things in, but I've been handing the packets in, not the answer sheets.
Yeah, well, you need the answer sheets, so get those in. Yeah, transfer those.
Quick question for you?
Yeah.
The heritage individual wasn't a good one? 12?
No, because he was considered, he was
oh,
being...
Oh, he was the heretic.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, there you go.
Thank you.
Yep. All right, you're going to wait until to get that stuff. Oh, you don't have anything there. All right, so you're going to leave now and go home and rest?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah. All right. Need any work? Or
no, the answer sheets, we have an exam on Wednesday.
Okay.
Answer sheets are online, okay, so you have to get them and then transfer the answers, okay?
Thanks.
Yep. Did you have fun Friday?
I really did.
That was fun.
Do you have lots of people come?
Yeah, we had probably 130. Yeah, that was a good turnout.
It was very nice.
Did you have a good time, Mike?
Yep. Sure did.
Hey, Caesar, sir.
Hey.
I'm sorry.
Hey.
Hey. Excuse me, sir. I have a question. On the test that's coming up on Wednesday, I imagine it's going to be on the stuff we're going to go over today. Is it going to be heavy on the reflection, refraction stuff as well?
There'll be stuff on it.
I'm just trying to curious.
Yeah, it's like everything that we've covered so far, what we've finished today. Any questions? Yes?
What topic does the test start with?
It's from the beginning, but basically it starts from, the emphasis will be on from the last test, where we picked up from where that.
So like the ancient astronomy?
Yeah, but astronomy. You go back in your notes and just look at the stuff we started after the first exam. Let's see, what's this? Lights, please. Hey, today we're going to talk about the laws of motion. So we're going to go through a little bit about what Galileo had to say about it and Isaac Newton. Galileo's contribution to the laws of motion is extensive. He set up a series of experiments trying to understand how things work, specifically in a gravity field. What he had to do was slow gravity down, so he used a series of ramps, to do his experiments. And what this allowed him to do was to measure the time and distances objects would roll down the ramp. And he came up with what we call the kinematic equations that deal with the laws of motion. Galileo set the framework for what we call today physics in the modern sense. And his work just blasted Aristotle out of the water in terms of the impact it had during that time period. I talked a little bit about that at the lecture on Friday, which, by the way, was quite nice, and you missed it if you weren't there. So, did you have a good time?
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. Great. They've had a couple of people here volunteering, and they had fun. But essentially, his big claim to fame with all of this work, where we'll see Newton picks up on, is this idea of inertia. Inertia we can define as a property of matter. If you were taking my physics class, we'd be spending several weeks on Galileo's equations and going through all of this. But what we need to know for this course is this basic idea. And essentially, what this means is, it's the resistance that an object has to be moved. Right? And you usually hear people use the word inertia in a non-scientific sense, but it gives you that impression that, boy, there's an awful lot of inertia with that politician, right? It's like they're not moving off of their particular ideas. So this property of matter essentially says the resistance to an object's motion. So if an object is moving, it will continue to do so. And by the same token, if it is at rest, it's not moving, it will continue to remain at rest. And that's as far as Galileo went with this. And he did a series of experiments using a pendulum. And if you drop a pendulum from some height along an arc, that arc will be described by the length of the pendulum wire. And the idea is that if this object left from, let's say, this height, when it swings over to the opposite side, it'll go back to that height. And this should continue, but of course it doesn't, because there's friction up here and that slows it down and then it stops. But he used this as an explanation of what you could expect to happen with systems. He would take, let's say, a ramp shape like that. The ball would go down. If the ball left from this height, it ends up at that height, at the other end. Now, ideally, that should always happen. But in, you know, when you do it, it doesn't go quite as high and never gets quite as high and eventually stops down here. But he was using a thought experiment that said, if this is the case, if the ball always wants to go back up, and I send it on a ramp that looks like this, and this ball is now moving along, when will it stop moving? Well, according to this experiment, it'll stop moving when it gets back up to the height that it left from. But if this is continually flat, never getting back up to that height, it'll never stop moving. So this was sort of the explanations he was trying to give to this. However, when you actually do the experiment, in reality, things slow down and stop. So you don't have the ideal condition. So when Galileo was doing these thought experiments, he was way ahead of his time in terms of putting aside the reality and looking at it from a theoretical perspective and then trying to understand it and work backwards to then come up with a general idea to explain how things would move. So this was a little different the way things were normally done, and it was definitely not Aristotelian. So he dealt a lot with gravity, as I said. Gravity, gravitas, meaning heavy. Okay, the opposite, levity, levitas. Levity meaning light. What he found during his experiments is that objects fall independently of their weight when you're in a gravity field. and those objects will fall at the same time. And supposedly he did this experiment where he dropped a ball, a cannonball, big heavy cannonball, and a little musket ball from the Leaning Tower of Pisa, dropped them, and they hit at the same time. Whether he actually did this experiment or not, who knows, but it's written down by one of his biographers that he did this. But the point remains that he did similar experiments and determined that this was the case. That experiment wouldn't have helped him much. It was, if he did it at all, it was probably as a demonstration, trying to demonstrate this idea to people. And the idea was sensible, and as he continued working with this, essentially, if you had a big rock and it fell under the influence of gravity, his thinking is that, well, a big rock, you can think of a big rock as a bunch of little rocks. You see, and all the little rocks have to fall at the same rate in order for the big rock to get to the ground, see? So this was the idea. And the idea can be applied in a neat way when you look at, say, the space shuttle in orbit, or the space station in orbit around the Earth. What you have is the objects constantly falling. So you can't weigh yourself. You can't take a scale and stand on it in the space station to measure your weight. The reason you can't is the space station's falling around the Earth, you're falling around the Earth, everything in it is falling around the Earth, including your scale. So if you put your scale down, which you can't even do that, but if you just pretend, okay, here's the floor, now I'll step on it, well, you can't step on it because it's falling. So what's the result? If you look at your weight on that scale, is zero, but you're not weightless. All right, but the scale says you're weightless. Now, if you were weightless, that would mean that you're away from gravity. But you're not away from gravity, and how do you know that? Well, the thing's in orbit. And what's keeping it in orbit? Gravity. So you're in this falling situation, and everything is falling. So when you take all these things together, you could really see the effect of Galileo's work in such an environment. And he was right on. Isaac Newton. And his three laws of motion. Galileo died the year Newton was born, or you could say it the other way. Newton was born the year Galileo died. And in terms of the science, he sort of picked up where Galileo left off, refined a few things, and started putting stuff down in more general forms to try to explain how things moved. By this time, Aristotle's ideas are relegated to, these are interesting philosophies. And now this new idea of trying to understand nature on nature's terms, and also apart from what you think it should be, just sort of getting the information and coming up with generalized forms of understanding, Newton put this stuff together. Now, again, he was very cheap, I told you that, and Halley helped, he paid him to publish his stuff, one of which, the things we're going to talk about now, comes out of this book called The Principia. And you can get this in translation. It was in English, and it's translated to Latin if you'd like. You can read it in Latin. But it looks like a geometry textbook for the most part. But its three laws are found in there. And the first law we call the law of inertia. Yep, right from Galileo's stuff. And Newton made some modifications to it to put it in context with his explanation of motion. And essentially, what he says is an object will remain in its current condition and and its current condition can either be moving along a straight line path, or stationary, in other words, it's not moving, unless something is done. And this is where he explains the piece that Galileo didn't really deal with, or stationary, unless acted on by an outside unbalanced force. So now we've got a new word to deal with, force. As always in science, in physics, we have definitions. The definitions don't tell us what the thing is. It tells us what the thing does. And we know when it's present, when we see whatever's going on, do what we define the thing to do. Such is the case with force. I can't tell you what a force is, but I can tell you when there's a force present.
Right? Force is with me.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Force is with you. A force is what you need to change an object's motion. That's what it says. So if you want to know what a force is, or if a force is present on something, then you would say a force is present if whatever the object was doing is now changed, you see, as a result of this thing called a force applied on it. So, if you want an object to get going, you got to put force on it. If you want an object to stop, you got to put force on it. Newton's second law tells us a little bit more generally what a force is. A force is defined as that which is needed to accelerate a mass. This is the most general form of it. And there's an equation associated with it. And this is one of the most famous equations in physics. You all probably see E equals MC squared, right? Well, this one you probably haven't seen unless you took some course similar. And F equals MA, where F is defined as the force, the unbalanced force. M is defined as the mass of the object that's being changed, its state of motion being changed. And A is defined as the acceleration of the object. Or the change that occurs to the object. Now, we also need to define the word accelerate. Mass we'll define as the amount of stuff in an object. Okay, I don't care what the stuff is. Whatever it is, whatever the object is, the mass is the amount of stuff that it has. The acceleration is defined as the change in what the object was doing. So if the object was still and it's now moving, it's been accelerated. That means there's a force acting on it. The object is moving and it stops or changes direction, that means there's a force acting on it. So with that in mind, how many forces are on you right now?
Two.
Tell me about them.
Gravity.
Yeah, which way does that go?
Down.
All right, where's the other one?
Wait.
Yeah, which way does that go?
Down.
Yeah?
Right.
How come you're not accelerating? Yeah? Well, you're not on the ground yet. It looks like you're sitting on something.
A chair.
All right, so what's the chair must be doing? Must be pushing back on you, which is eventually going to take us to Newton's third law. So if you added up what the chair was pushing up on you versus what you're pushing down on the chair, what number would you get?
Should equal out, right?
Yeah, you get zero. Because how do you know? Well, if there's no force on you, no net balance, there's no acceleration. Suppose the chair breaks. Will you accelerate?
Yes.
Yep, because the chair can't push up on you equal to you pushing down, there'll be an acceleration. Okay, got that in your heads now?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to ask you a question. Yes, question? Oh, you just... Okay. How many accelerators are in a car?
There's three.
What are they?
Brake, accelerating, and steering wheel.
Very good. The brakes... Well, the acceleration, the accelerator, that's called the accelerator pedal, right? Makes you go faster. The brake makes you go slower and stop. All right? So those two conditions, you got a force. What about the steering wheel? That's an accelerator, because what does it do? Changes your direction. See? So that's a force that's applied on there. So a device that you can call an accelerator can make you go faster, slower, or change direction. Right? Suppose I punch you in the nose.
Uh-oh.
Is there a force as a result of that punch on your nose?
There's a reaction, I know that.
Well, I could break your nose will deform, whatever. You bump into an automobile. The bumper deforms, it breaks. Cars get in a collision. The car is designed to buckle and bend. And in the process, a force was absorbed. Did something change? Yes. So you could say a force was applied. And if you understand how that works, then you could make a building that can withstand explosions. Because then you know how big the explosion is going to be, you know how big the building, how much the building has to push back, and you're good to go. So, the third law then is necessary to help us understand. And the third law essentially says, for every force, there is an equal and opposite force. You probably heard it, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. But for every force is an equal and opposite force. And essentially, what this is saying is that forces occur in pairs. Okay, so these are the three laws of motion according to Newton. Now, we go back to the second law. If you have an elephant and a mouse, and you want them to move, let's put them on a swing, okay? So you got two swings, you got the elephant swing and the mouse swing, and they're both ready to go. The swing's perpendicular to the ground, nothing's moving. You want to cause the elephant and the mouse to move, you want to accelerate them, you must apply a force, an unbalanced force on them. So now you get behind the elephant and you push with a force, and you then get behind the mouse and you push with the same force you push the elephant with. Which one swings higher?
Mouse.
The mouse. Question.
The elephant would be running away from the mouse.
Yeah, but not
the mouse is sitting still.
Not in my class. I mean, they're friends.
Not if it's sitting still. They go away from when they move.
Oh, so they got to move and they go up their trunks, right?
Little birds.
So here you have the two. You have automobile. Your automobile is stopped through your brake system. Okay? So your car is designed with a certain brake system that takes into account the mass of your automobile. So what do they have to put into that little equation? Not only how much, say, your car weighs, the mass of your car, but the occupants in it and the fuel. So you drive along, and you're pretty much familiar with how your car feels when you step on the brakes. And now you start towing a trailer. What has happened to the mass of the automobile when you attach a trailer? It increases. So your brake is applying a force that's the same. So what happens to the distance it takes you to stop? It takes longer to stop. Right? If you want to stop shorter, what do you have to do with the force? You have to apply more, but your brake system can't. So you need brakes on the trailer. Sometimes if you have a big trailer, have electric brakes or something, you have to hook it up to your car, so when you step on your brakes, it activates the brakes on the trailer. Right? Now, let's see. I need to clean a little bit here, because I didn't clean it as much as I should have. So just hold on a second. I'll be right back. That's physics stuff. All right, that should be, that should make me work right there. Okay, ready? Now, remember Ptolemy's epicycles and the deferent circle, and the idea was you had this arrangement. An object could go around nothing. Right? Here was the Earth in the center. So there's the epicycle. Now the question is, with Newton's laws and Galileo's ideas of motion, we have a problem. And the problem is, how does something go around nothing? You see? Because if you want something to go around something, you have to apply a force to change its direction so it can continually go around. Well, if you're in orbit around the Earth, the force that's keeping you there and changing your direction, how do you really want to move, according to the law of inertia? You want to go straight. Planet's gravity grabs you and keeps you from going straight. The result is it constantly changes your direction. So there's some force that will act on you if you're going to be in an orbit. And this force is due to gravity. Kepler's laws of motion didn't explain what was keeping the objects in this elliptical orbit, but Newton's ideas that he dealt with in terms of the forces due to gravity, and he came up with, it looks like this. This is the universal law of gravity according to Newton. And what's important are these M's. M1 and M2 are defined as, let's say, M1 is your mass, and M2 is the Earth's mass. Or it could be any two objects, okay? And then R is the distance between them. Between M1 and M2. And G is a constant of proportionality. All right, but let's just look at this. What does this say? That if you're separated by distance R, F is the force due to gravity that's keeping you from going in a straight line. Years ago when I got my driver's license, that was an exciting time, you know, when you get your driver's license. Now you're going to go have some, you know, girlfriends, you're going to find your girlfriends, or even if you don't have any, they're going to think you're cool and they probably want to go for a ride in a car anyway.
Still paper back then?
What's that?
Were they still just paper back then?
What was paper back?
Driver's license? Didn't have a picture on
them? Oh, no. No, that's because everybody knew who you were anyway.
They were parchment, okay?
Yeah, that's right. And they had a very nice scroll, and they had somebody who just did calligraphy. So anyway, So I got my license, and back then the cars didn't have seat belts, and if it was your parents' car, they probably put a plastic on the car seat so that it would preserve the car seats. But of course, plastic is really slippery. So you're driving along, and I experienced the COD corners, and you would want to do the COD corner. It stood for "Come Over, Dear." All right. So if you turn the right way, and your girlfriend is in the car, then she, because of these laws of motion, would seem to slide towards you. You see, come over, dear. Right? So I really didn't have it down yet. And as I'm driving along, I turned the wrong way, and she'd always slide toward the door. But did she slide? Was she sliding? Let's take a look at this. Yeah, here you have a car. It's me and my girlfriend. And if we weren't applying a force here, the car would move how? Straight. But we're applying a force to the steering wheel and makes the car do this. But we're not attached to the car. So what do we want to do? And I'm holding on the steering wheel, so I'm not going anywhere. But what does she want to do? She wants, can you go straight? So as she continues to go straight and the car moves around, what's the effect? It looks like you bumped into the side of the car. Maybe you've experienced this driving on a slippery road. Okay, you're going around a curve, and here you are. And you want to go like that, right? Which means you have to apply a force somehow to the road through your automobile so you can turn. But all of a sudden you hit this patch of ice or something that's slick right there. What does your car immediately do? Continues how? Yeah, well, it continues going straight, tangent to the curve. And if you've ever noticed this happen, what usually is right over here? A tree. I don't know how they know where to put the tree, but when you slide off the road, there's a tree or a pole or something right there that you smack into, right? And again, this, what's happening here is you no longer can apply the force to keep you going around in a circle, so you continue according to the law of inertia as you should, in a straight line. You can't apply the force. So when we looked at Ptolemy's idea, you can't get something to go around in a circle unless there's something pulling it in a circle. So either you needed jet, some sort of rocket engine on the planet to keep it going in a circle, or it's just a bunch of baloney in terms of how nature works. Was it a good description? Yes, Ptolemy's description was good. You could predict where planets would be, but he didn't explain what was causing it to stay in a circle. Kepler was onto something. He knew that it wasn't quite a circle, it was an ellipse. So whatever was causing an object naturally to orbit another object would be elliptical in shape. And it wasn't until Newton came up with the idea. Galileo had a clue of what was going on, and then Newton formalized it, and it looked like this. The universal law of gravity said, whatever gravity is, Newton didn't like this at all, because Newton was a very mechanistic person. In order for things to move for Newton, you had to apply a force physically to the thing you wanted to move, for example. You had to touch it, you see? But look at this. What's touching that? It fell, and there's nothing here. Newton didn't like that. That was very mystical. And he was trying to explain the universe as a mechanical piece of equipment, as a machine. And machines work by contact. But when you look at a force, if you cause an acceleration, I don't care where the force came from. Let's say you're psychic and you can think things to move. You have the power of telekinesis, right? And somebody says, I'm going to make the overhead projector move. And all of a sudden you'll stare at it and it goes like this, right? Nobody touches it. And would I be all upset? No, I think that was cool, and I want to find out what mechanism you used to apply that force. As a scientist, I would want to experiment and find out what was going on. It wouldn't surprise me that somebody could do that. I would want to know how it's done, you see? there has to be a force applied. What's the mechanism to apply the force? That's what you would want to learn. Be like trying to figure out Ptolemy's idea. What's the mechanism that applies, now we have the word force, to keep the object in orbit? And there was none for Ptolemy, which is why his theory get put aside, and we've got Kepler's ideas, Galileo's, and then it culminates with Newton. So, it's all good stuff. Did you ever take a bucket of water and spin it around, and the water never flies out? Again, what's the water trying to do? Maintain straight, a line tangent to the circle. Well, when I was a little younger, before I had my license, I think I went and I saw a movie, David and Goliath, and I figured, yeah, that's me. So I built a sling. You know the story of David and Goliath? It's that David, he slew Goliath with a stone he put in a sling. A sling's a couple of pieces of rope with something you can put a rock in. You spin it around like this, and then at the right time you let it go, and poof, rock goes flying. Now, spins, right? It's going in a circle. All right, so there's only one place you can release it, so the rock is going to go where you want it to go. So before I went to school one day, I was going to practice with my sling. So I went to the end of the driveway, well, the front end of the driveway, and there was a big open field behind our house. So I put the rock in the sling, and my father's car's behind me. And so I'm getting ready. I didn't see it. Then all of a sudden I heard crack. And I turned around and I nailed my father's windshield. Oh yeah. Well, he was doing his morning thing. He's in the bathroom shaving and stuff. So I opened the door, run in the house. Dad, I'll pay for it. And I ran out. And I got it when I got home. But what happened? What happened? When I let it go, I wanted it to go that way, so I let it go when the sling and rock were aimed where I thought I should let it go. All I succeeded in doing when I did that is it was a little high because I figured, oh, it's going to lob over, right? But I let it go right about like this. So once I do that, this is the preferred path of the straight line it was going to maintain, and it did. Nature works just the way it's supposed to. The rock went like that, and bam, right into the... If I tried to do it on purpose, obviously I probably couldn't, because I couldn't make it go where I wanted to. I got better at it, though. And then we had a little war one day with our friends from down the other end of the neighborhood. Yeah, we beat them. Because I was a little science geek. I invented all the weapons that we had on our forts. I did. I had all these weapons. We had slings. We put barbed wire in the grass and they couldn't crawl through again. Yeah. We had a fort with this old abandoned, like a, it was like a shack. And we took it over and we had up on the roof, we had logs that would roll down if they tried to come up, and there was a secret entrance underneath. And then they attacked us one day when nobody was there, and they took over the fort. So we had to use chemical warfare, and we got them. We filled this big... Yeah, chemical war. Yeah. But one of my friend's fathers had this great big electric light bulb. Well, I saw that, and I said, that's a good container. So we took the bulb, and I broke the neck off, the filament out, and then we filled it with like all sorts of chemicals, like cleaning soap and stuff. And then one of the kids who was a good climber, Dominic, he was a good climber, he climbed up with this bomb, right? And then dropped it in there, and the kids come running out all filled with soap. They smelled nice. Nobody died when we were kids. Nobody died. It was good. It was good. We learned how to survive in Vietnam when we were playing in the fields. Anyway, the
movie about that, didn't
they? Huh?
Were you a kid in the movie?
No, I wasn't kidding any movie. All right, let's take one. Oh, whoa, look at that. I guess we're almost done. This thing just ran out. Let's just take one look at this. Again, we see the inverse square relationship. What this means is that this force of gravity is going to act in a certain way. As we, the masses move away from each other, the amount or the attractive force is diminished, and it's diminished by the square of the distance. So if you get twice as far away, the gravitational effect is four times as weak. It's the same thing you feel if you're at a campfire and it's a little bit too warm, you step back. And as you step back, the effect of the warmth is diminished by a square of that distance. So it falls off rather rapidly. Right? And as a result of this, when Newton was doing this work, he came up with this equation. The interesting thing is he had no idea what this number was. Big G. He knew it was very small, but he had no way of knowing what it was. He sort of predicted where it would be, and it wasn't until a while later a guy named Cavendish actually did an experiment and was able to determine the value of G. And to just put it in perspective, we're dealing with something like 10 to the minus 11. Right? Very, very tiny, tiny value. And this idea of gravity stayed around until Einstein came along, because once again, this does not explain what gravity is. It's showing you when you have it present, and you can measure the effect of an acceleration due to this force if you can make your measurements of mass and distances. And as a result of this, no explanation about what gravity is, but you're able to tell when you have it. You watch two objects come together. Einstein came up with an idea that tried to explain what gravity might be, and we use that idea today. And what Einstein was talking about, I'm just going to draw you a picture, and the picture will speak volumes. Get it? If you stuck a planet in space, a mass, there's a distortion in all dimensions of space. So right now, all of us, because we have mass, there's a distortion according to the amount of mass we have. And that distortion bends space, so other objects similarly distorted can fall into the distortion. Gravity is an attractive force. It always attracts. We don't understand why that is. Gravity is also a weak force, but it's one of the most pervasive ones. It acts over great distances. If there were only two objects in the entire known universe, separated as far away as you can imagine, and you just let them alone, they would find each other because of the two little particles all alone in the vastness of space and time ultimately come together. I could see a movie. I could see a movie, the great love story of all time. Mass 1 and Mass 2 find each other after eons. Yeah, I know. But anyway, here you have the two objects coming together because of this. So you say, well, how far away can you be when you don't have this? There is no how far away you can be. Because as long as this has some value, you're going to have, it gets really small, this can get really big. Now think of it. This isn't getting small, this is getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So it can be infinitely big. And you'd say, well, if this was infinitely big, you'd have no force. But here's where mathematics and the physical world start to depart a little bit. This gets infinitely big, you can always put a number on it. And if you put a number on it and divide it into that, this gets really, really small. But it's more than zero. And if it's more than zero, what does Newton's law say? There's going to be a force of attraction in this case, and there'll be an acceleration. So the objects will accelerate. Okay. Let's see what else you need for today. That's it. We mean nothing. That's enough. Okay, any questions? So Wednesday in this room, your exam, just like last time, and we do the same thing. You take the exam, you leave, we come back on Monday. If you have questions, that's when we deal with it. If there's a question about a question, like, is this word, what does it mean? I'll answer it. That's not a problem. All right, lights please.
Yeah.
Anyone handing anything in? Please check on the side if you didn't pick up work that I've just handed back.
We're going to have stuff about historic advances, right?
Everything that we covered. And again, go back and do your reading based on the lecture notes.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, you're applying ideas. Does anyone have to sign up for the observation? I'll meet you at the observatory.
Sorry, man.
Did we sign up for the third one yet?
I don't know. I think so.